Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, it's our post-trade deadline episode, and Matt, I don't know about you, this is one of my favorite episodes we do every year. I'm Dan alongside Matt. Let's break down this deadline, shall we, Matt?
Yeah, at least we didn't lose to a Zamboni driver this week, so that's a positive.
Well, let's look at those games first then. No Zamboni drivers, but the best team in the league was here on February 21st, Friday night. The Calgary Flames took on the Boston Bruins in the Dome, and Calgary ended up dropping this game 4-3 to the Bruins in regulation. Well, let's start with you. What were some of your thoughts on this game?
Well, I thought the Flames came out flying, and obviously they did very well, scoring 3 goals in the first 3.5 minutes, and then that was basically it for their compete level for most of the rest of the game. And Boston's too good of a team to respect, and I think that the Flames just could not get anything going at any point, and Boston just kind of strangled the team off, and Calgary just couldn't get anything going after that.
I think the fact that the Flames were at one point in this game up 2-0 against the best team in the league does say something about these guys, though. I thought in the first period, Boston gave the Flames a lot of really good ozone time and space, and that's why the Flames were able to do what they did. And while we lost, I think this was one of those games where it was a respectable loss. And against the best team in the league, honestly, the Flames did not look as lost as I thought they were going to.
No, and especially because of the fact that Boston, to me, is the team to beat in the playoffs. I think, much like Tampa heading into the postseason, looked at the most formidable of any of the teams, Boston seems to have that crown thus far this season. And you know, there's no real weaknesses with the Bruins, and Calgary, they did get out to a good start, but they just couldn't beat them, and it's hard to beat good teams. Like, we remember back, even before we were doing this show against teams like Chicago and LA, when they were good and cup contenders, like, those games were always a battle. And, like, if you actually won the game, it was, like, full marks to you because they're such a good overall team that you have to play your heart out just to get anything on those guys. And Calgary, I found, didn't quite rise to that occasion until the third period a bit, but they just didn't have any answers for the team.
They definitely made a push again in the third, and I thought it was interesting if you listen to some of the coaches' comments after the game and some of the players. The coach was very complimentary of his team, and I don't know if that's just, I mean, he used to work in Boston, if he likes the Bruins or what it is, but I thought Jeff Ward very complimentary of his players and his team and their performance. But a lot of the players down on themselves for, you know, losing to Boston. And they had 3 days off before this, so it's just tough to get going. But again, I thought a pretty overall from an inconsistent Calgary Flames team that we've seen all year, I thought a pretty respectable effort by this team.
Yeah, and like, if the Flames were ever to meet a team like Boston in the playoffs, I don't see how the Flames would come out on the winning side of it.
I think it would look a lot like that Colorado series last year.
Yeah, and I think that Calgary is going to have to learn to be more desperate. And I think that, like, that's part of the thing when you see teams beat, like, the better caliber teams, like Columbus last year. Columbus, they knew that they were going to get smoked by the Lightning, and they didn't care, so they just played a loose, desperate hockey and ended up sweeping the Lightning, who were caught flat-footed. And Calgary needs to learn some lessons from games like this, where you have to elevate your level of desperation and, like, treat it like the last 5 minutes and you're down by 2 goals throughout the game. And, you know, attention to details all game. And, like, if you're wanting any success in the postseason, or even to make the postseason, like, you're gonna have to elevate your game. And some of the players are, to their credit, doing that, but not enough, frankly. And it'll be interesting to see, especially with the rematch coming up this week, how the Flames fare and if they can learn any lessons from this game.
Yeah, and we see them, by them I should say the Boston Bruins. We play them again this week on Tuesday in Boston. So, like you said, it'll be interesting to see if there's any change to the Flames game or if they learn anything from this game in the Dome against Boston. But I thought after big wins against bad teams in California all week, this was a good measuring stick of what this team really is. Like the week before, it was all those big wins that we talked about against teams that are not good teams. So I thought, okay, let's see what these guys have against the best in the league. And I got about what I expected.
Yeah, and Calgary, especially moving forward as the season progresses and as we're, you know, like now, of the next 14 games, 12 of them are against teams that are in the hunt for the postseason. So there's not going to be too many easy teams. And in order to make the postseason, Calgary will have to play desperate hockey. And up to this point in the season, we haven't really seen that effort level from them. And it'll be interesting to see if they can find that next gear, especially with several teams stocking up at the trade deadline from our division.
We'll get to the deadline a little bit and talk about some of those and their impact, but let's talk about the other game this week first. So the next game, the Flames go from best to worst. They start their 5-game road trip against the Detroit Red Wings. It's a trip that'll last all week. And I think we got what the Flames probably should have got out of this game, especially, you know, after the Boston game and a big 4-2 win for the Flames against Detroit. Things looked a little shaky at the beginning, I thought, for the Flames in this one. But overall, you know, you're playing the worst team in the league. The Flames did what they had to do. Is there much more to say about this one, Matt?
Well, the score could have been better, but, you know, it's one of those where, like, I think even if the Flames sat out a bunch of people, they would have still beat them. Like, Detroit's not a very good team.
No, and there, you know, there's some teams this year that were put together properly and just haven't performed or had injuries, like San Jose. This was a deliberately bad team. These guys are going through a rebuild. And, you know, we saw, as we have in the last little bit, goals from Mangiapane, our depth scoring. You know, he got we got Johnny Gaudreau on the board, Sean Monahan on the board, which has become more and more common to see Gaudreau scoring the last little bit. But, you know, we got depth scoring. We got our top line scoring. I just, when I look at this one, the Flames look like a playoff team playing the worst team in the league. There's not much else to say, I don't think. No. Riddick looked good. I thought a little bit shaky maybe in the first, but definitely calmed down as the game went on.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to have a bad game against Detroit, unless you're Montreal, who lost all 4 meetings this year for some reason.
You know what? I thought, though, if there's a team you're going to lose to this week, just because we know how the Flames tend to play down to their opponents, this could have been the game.
Yeah, well, I was worried about that, so I'm glad that the Flames actually showed up enough to get the 2 points.
Yeah,
because you don't want to, like, especially heading into the trade deadline, it's like, yeah, that kind of sends signals that to the GM, hey, maybe we should sell instead of, you know, even thinking about doing anything.
Yeah, no, for sure. After that game, I think the Calgary Flames had a decent week overall, one win, one loss. But as you mentioned, going into the deadline, I have to imagine there's a few other things maybe on some guys' minds after that Detroit game. But either way, it pushed the Flames back into a wild card spot. The Flames now sit 70 points, tied with Arizona. Calgary's in wild card 1 and Arizona wild card 2. Vancouver's at 72 points. Edmonton at 73 points is second in the Pacific. And then Vegas, the Pacific Division leader, at 76 points. So as has been the story for most of the season, the Flames are in it, but also very close to being out of it at the same time. I mean, we've got Winnipeg at 69, Nashville at 68 right on our heels. These guys really have to keep a better than 500 pace from now on, I think, to stay in the playoff spot.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, especially with Vancouver losing Markstrom for a bit, that how they fare. Calgary, their destiny is in their own hands. Like, Calgary was about, you know, a few points up on San Jose around this point last year and ended up winning the division by double digits. And, like, if Calgary can get some wins going and Vegas starts losing, we can still win the division. It just, you know, the Calgary has to get their stuff together and moving forward. And I think that, you know, if they're going to have a good end to the season and a good drive into the playoffs, that they need to start going sooner than later.
And right now, I'm not sure that as Flames fans, we can really be, you know, hoping for number one. I mean, it'd be nice, but I think right now the goal has to just be stay in a playoff spot.
Yeah, and frankly, like, as weird as it sounds, I'd almost rather be second or third in the division and play either Vancouver or Edmonton in the first round than, you know, having a situation of a hot wild card team like last year.
You know, if you look at the Pacific, and I know we've talked about it, you especially this year, I really think if you can get into the top two or three in the Pacific, I'd say top two for sure, you have as good a chance as anybody to go to the third round.
Yeah, because our division is so bizarrely bad.
Every team's got some flaws. No team here is perfect. It's just a matter of who can win 4 out of 7. And I think any team can beat any other team in this division on any given night.
Yeah, it's not like years gone by, like where Anaheim was clearly awesome or San Jose was clearly awesome and like everybody else in the division's just kind of there. Like, there's no real clear-cut front-runner, and Calgary, I still believe Calgary has the best overall talent level of any of the teams in the Pacific. It's just getting them all pulling in the right direction at the same time, and that's been the main obstacle for this team all season, is, you know, everybody going towards the same goal at the same time.
I was talking to somebody this week, and curious to get your thoughts on this. Would you rather the guys that Calgary has here got hot early and then trickled out, or were sort of mediocre all year and then get hot near the end?
Oh, by far, if you can go into the playoffs doing well, I would much rather that. Like, obviously, like, you'd rather be like Boston, where you're just consistently awesome all season, and then you
just, very few teams
roll
can do
over
that.
Everybody. Yeah, like, you have to have, like, everybody being good consistently, like Boston generally does, and, you know, have everything going the right way. And but I think that Calgary, if they can get hot at the right time, and, like, down the last 19 games of the season, if they can string together a couple of good 10-game segments that they can, like, if they can win, say, 12 or 13 or 14 of those 20 games, including the Detroit game, like, that would be a very good rush into the postseason. And I think that, you know, if Calgary can get on that kind of a streak, then, you know, we do have, in my opinion, the best talent pool of our division. It's just, you know, which team's going to show up has been the Flames' problem all year.
And we're starting to see Johnny going and Monty going. I agree with you. The guy I talked to this week actually thought the opposite, but I agree with you. I'd rather get hot just for the playoffs and try to ride that than cool down for the playoffs and try to get it going again.
Well, we saw that last season where the Flames were, and the Sharks, frankly, were just awesome for the first three quarters of the season. You knew they were going to be 1-2 in the division, and both teams took their foot off their gas. And, like, San Jose did end up getting to the conference finals, but, you know, they got smoked by St. Louis and had a tough time with both Vegas and Colorado. And, you know, Calgary had lost to Colorado because, like, they didn't have that desperation. And I think that, like, where Calgary is right now, we need to be desperate in order to make the postseason. Like, we're only 1 point up on a playoff spot. So, you know, just to make it, you have to be giving it your all. And, if the Flames can do that, then they should be fine. Especially because, like, frankly, looking at the teams in our division, if we faced off against Edmonton, we stand a fairly good chance of beating them. Vancouver, same thing. Arizona, same thing. Vegas might be a bit of a difficult climb, but...
I'd rather not play Vegas in the first round.
Yeah. So, like, any permutation with our division rivals, it's like, yeah, we could probably take them in the first
round.
Especially
now they have Robin Leonard.
Oh, no.
Well, let's talk about Leonard. Let's talk about this week. I think this is what everyone's waiting for. Trade deadline was today, and as always, some interesting moves made around the league. We saw some...
Just asking, does that make Marc-Andre Fleury Batman?
Batman and Robin?
Batman, Robin, yeah.
Maybe. Don't they call him Flower? That could be like Flower and Robin, your new Vegas crime-fighting team. Vegas yes. puck-stopping team.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll give him a cape at the practice facility. So anyway, back to the trade deadline. Flower and Robin are now in Vegas, but a lot of other players moving here. And I thought an interesting day for movement. I had a feeling there was going to be high prices because there weren't a lot of teams moving, but a lot more teams made moves than I thought. We'll talk about some of the moves from other teams in a little bit and how they might affect the Flames. But the Flames make three transactions today. And if you listen to Brad Treliving talk after the deadline, he said that their focus changed in the last couple of weeks with some of the injuries to their defensemen. It sounds, reading between the line, like they wanted to get some forwards and ended up getting some defensemen. But let's talk about these deals, and then we'll get some thoughts on them. The Calgary Flames moved their 2020 third-round pick to the Chicago Blackhawks to get Erik Gustafsson, who is 27, 6 foot, 197 pounds, current salary is $1.4 million. This is a guy coming off a career season last year at 50 points.
60, actually.
You're right, 60 points. And I think a pretty overall as a middle, pair defenseman, a good pick. Now, I saw some people criticize the third round pick in this one and maybe giving up too much. And I thought the same thing at first. But when I look at the Flames draft picks, this pick could easily be replenished by the Oilers. All we got to do is get James Neal to score two more goals and we get the Oilers third. So Chicago will get whichever pick ends up being earlier in the third round this year. Matt, do you want to give your thoughts on the Gustafsson pickup?
Yeah, he's not a very good defensive defenseman. And, like, there's some games that...
Great offensive defenseman.
He's just okay defensively. Others, he's like, what are you doing out there?
Who's worse in their own end, Gustafsson or Goudreau?
Probably Gustafsson.
Wow.
Yeah, you know.
Gustafsson or Iginla?
Probably Gustafsson. Wow. But, you know, he's not very good defensively. But, you know, he is a very good offensive defenseman. He scored 60 points last year, which for a defenseman is ridiculous. He was sixth overall in the league.
Especially on a mediocre team like Chicago was.
Yeah, and he's on pace for about 35-40 now. So, you know, like, that would be obviously a very big shot in the arm for our power play. And the Flames have been lacking a true point man on the power play, and I think that I've always liked Gustafsson with Chicago for the power play, and I think that he'll be a very welcome addition. And, you know, with his price tag, like, I don't see him being he's a UFA at the end of the year. I don't expect him to be an expensive re-sign, and Calgary was actually interested in signing him prior to him going to Chicago.
As you said, he's not great in his own end. He's got 26 points this year, which I think, without looking, makes him the second highest point getter on defense for the Flames this season.
Yeah, like, he's pretty good. And
I think if you pair him up with the right partner, I'm thinking Hanifin, who's got some more defensive responsibility, you might not have a bad pairing there.
Yeah, or even Forbort, who we're going to be talking about in a minute, as on the third pairing. And, you know, it just depends. I think you have to shelter Gustafsson. Or you could do what I've always wanted and, you know, solve your right wing problems by getting a defenseman up there and, you know, tell him to score.
I think Tree already has enough issue with bringing in a left shot defenseman, much less taking a left shot defenseman and converting him to a right winger.
Well, you never know. He can play on the right side defensively.
Which I think is definitely a good thing for him. I like this signing for what we gave up for him. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Gustafsson back next season. Like you said, his salary this year is $1.4 million. So, you know, even at $1.82 million, I think I honestly could see Gustafsson coming into Hamonic's spot in the lineup next year. Not saying they're the same player.
Well, I'm actually looking at the two acquisitions today as basically like the bargain basement version of Brody and Hamonic.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, if you were to replace those two with those two,
you'd have to move somebody else up the lineup then. But yeah, it gives you some veteran depth.
And like, you know, like especially like if you're expecting Valimaki to be in the NHL next season, you know, like you could get away with things like, you know, a Hamonic or a Hanifin and Valimaki second pairing, have Forbort with Gustafsson as the third pairing, and Anderson with Giordano. Like, that would be a very passable NHL defense.
Matt, I think to me the biggest thing about Gustafsson that I like is, as you mentioned, this guy can quarterback the power play, and the Flames have needed that guy for a while. They've needed a really offensive defenseman there. We sort of had Hamilton doing that for a while, but I think one of the best things about this guy is, like you said, yeah, he can be a defensive liability, but if they keep him around, I can see him being that really offensive defenseman these guys need.
Yeah, and Calgary needs to get some additional offensive weapons in their toolkit, and I think that having Gustafsson adds a element that the Flames have been lacking for a while now, and hopefully that can translate into some more power play goals, which that'll translate into more wins and points, so that would be a good thing.
I don't think we can ever expect 60 points again from this guy, but it could be a useful defensive contributor.
Well, like, even if he's a adequate third pairing guy that can chip in 30 points or 35 or 40 points, like, that's awesome for what, you know.
I'd even take 20 from a third pairing guy.
Yeah, and like, he's adequate, and like, if you can get him to fill in, because like, honestly, at a re-sign, I don't see him being more than 2.5-ish million on a like 2 or 3 year deal, so like, that's an adequately price depth defenseman for what this team needs, and he's 27, so he fits with the age group better.
Gustafsson is expected to join the Calgary Flames tomorrow in Boston, where they will be for obviously their game against the Bruins, and it's been announced here his Calgary Flames number. He will wear number 56. Do you remember when Brian Burke was here and everybody had to have a number under like 30?
Yeah, I know.
And now we got 56, we got Shillington wearing 58, we got Mangiapane with 88. Like, Burke's probably sitting in the studio in Toronto pulling out that long hair he's got slicked back.
Yep.
Ah, numbers!
Ah. You know, well, it's good to see some unusual numbers instead of the standard, like, 33, 44, 55, or, you know, in the single digits, so...
And the next guy we're going to talk about is also expected to join the team tomorrow in Boston. He'll be wearing number 20, which feels like a forward number, not a defensive number. And that's Derek Forbort. Derek Forbort comes to us from the LA Kings. He was traded for a conditional fourth round pick in 2021. Just as a note on how that condition works, if the Flames make the conference final this spring and Forbort plays half the games, the pick becomes a third in 2022, or if he re-signs with Calgary, it becomes a third in 2022. Or if Tree's nose is itchy on a Tuesday, after he's been in Boston, it becomes a fifth. No, I'm just kidding about the last part, but you get these really weird conditions on some of these picks. LA is also eating 25% of Forbort's salary, so the Flames will be on the hook for $1.8 million. This looks very similar in principle to the Oscar Fantenberg deal last year, done with the same team. What do you think of Forbort?
He's a very much a Derek England type guy. And
big, heavy defenseman.
Yeah, a nice 6'4", 220 pound. Yeah, that's just exactly what the Flames need. And
I think Brad Treliving today called him a long defenseman.
Yeah. Well, I would expect Forbort to be back, frankly. I liked Forbort when he was with LA. I think that he's just a good, rugged defenseman, and I think that the Flames need that size on the blue line, and I think that's been one of the things that has been lacking since Derek England left. Like, Hamonic's done a decent job, but, you know, we need more than just one guy who's decent at that kind of game. And Forbort can play up and down the defense pairings. Like, he was with Drew Doughty this season, so that's good.
So Forbort's current cap hit, 2.5. If you bring him back, do you pay him anywhere near that?
Oh, probably you'd see him back around the 3-3.25 mark at most.
See, I think I would start negotiating from the 25% cap hit, which is 1.8.
Yeah, well, he is coming off an injury and his back's been a little wonky, so, you know, we'll see. You know, I think that both Gustafsson and Forbort were guys that the Flames were looking at it for free agency, so why not get them now while they can help you for the playoffs and see how they fit in with this team. But I think that both these guys, I put it this way, I would not be surprised if between now and July 1st that they both have contracts with the team.
Well, and even Brad Treliving said in his media availability today, you're always looking at guys you bring in as potentially coming back here. I think you're right. I think Brad's looked at both these guys. They both have flaws, and that's why you get them for a mid-round pick. Like you said, Forbort's been hurt a lot this year. But both these guys have played with good defensemen. Forbort's played with Doughty. You've seen Gustafsson play a lot with Keith. Some guys who know how to step in the lineup and play well with top defensemen. Not that I would call either one of these guys our top guy next year, but guys that know how to play with top guys and probably good depth pieces for this team. I would say much better depth pieces than Oscar Fantenberg.
Yeah, Fantenberg was okay, but
Fantenberg, you're bringing in to be a number seven. These guys, you're not.
No, and that's why I think that these guys could be part of this team next season, even like as like the third pairing, and have them as cheaper alternatives to bringing back either Hamonic or Brody, and go from there. Like, frankly, like I would expect both of them to sign for about $5 million total on the upper side of things, which would free up, say, like Hamonic's contract to go towards another forward instead.
Yeah, I can see Gustafsson maybe getting a bit of a raise. I think Forbort's gonna have to take a discount just because of all his injuries. I can see him doing a 1 year at just under 2 to about 2, just because I don't know as a team I would want to lock him up for 3 years at $3 million with the injury riddled season he's had. I could see them saying, let's bring him back for 1 year at, you know, 1.8, $2 million. But even $2 million is expensive for your third pair guy. Like, I could see maybe offering him 1.5 and say, we'll do 1 year, 1.5, stay healthy, we'll talk after that.
Yeah, it just depends, but, you know, we'll have to have this conversation after we see them play and how the rest of the Flames, rest of their season goes. But it'll be interesting to see. And at least with getting these two guys, the Flames have no need to rush Valimaki back. So that's always good.
Well, and not just Valimaki, but I think even when Gio comes back, he can play less minutes. And Brad talked about that today. You know, with Gustafsson being able to play on the PP, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Forsberg on the PK. I think that you can really cut down on some of the minutes that the captain's playing.
Yeah, and anything to ease off, and hopefully like Hamonic's back at some point before the playoffs, you know, like it would help.
The captain's getting older, and I think we can preserve his longevity by playing him less.
Yeah, and Calgary needs to figure out, like, post Giordano being the best guy on the team defensively.
Well, they have the answer. Like, it's Derek Forbort.
Yes.
One guy we did say goodbye to today, the trade nobody's talking about, Brandon Davidson sent to San Jose for future considerations, which pretty much means San Jose's GM is picking up the bill next time that he and Brad go for dinner. This was a trade that Brad Treliving talked about today of they wanted to keep Brandon Davidson up here. They didn't send him back to the AHL before the deadline yesterday, which means he's not eligible to play in the AHL again this year. But because they have Forsberg Gustafsson, they don't think he'll be playing, so they wanted to find a space for him to play. So this is pretty much a way of saying, let's give him away. Now, it's weird because Brad said if we put him on waivers, teams would have claimed him on waivers. And I'm thinking, well, that's essentially what happened here. Like, just waive the guy.
Well, I guess that they're wanting to do the guy a favor and a solid just because... Yeah, you know, and I think that that goes a long way as well for player recruitment if you treat guys properly instead of, you know, like throwing them on waivers and, you know, it's just a nice thing to do instead of, you know, it's respecting the player as a person instead of, you know, like, anybody will take you, who cares about you.
And down the road when the Calgary Flames are trying to make a deal for Kevin LeBanc out of San Jose, and they say, remember that time you sucked and we gave you Brandon Davidson? Cough up, gentlemen.
Yes.
We'll also give you a fourth, and that's our future consideration. So, no, I don't know. It's just you can't trade for nothing, so this is the way of trading for nothing.
Yeah. And it's just a nice thing to do for Davidson. It is. So that way, you know, and it's one of those things that it's a minor thing, but it helps. And it's just like when, like, the Flames would sign guys from college and, like, guys like Spencer Fu and play him in the NHL, even though not necessarily an NHL-ready prospect. But it just, well, hey, you signed with us. We guaranteed you a shot in the NHL. You got it. Thanks for coming. And
burning you the deal with two games.
Yeah, it's just one of those pleasantries that helps solidify the Flames organization as being, you know, respectful of players and, you know, actually care enough to follow through on things. And, you know, a lot of teams don't do that. And if that helps us sign somebody important down the road or, you know, facilitates things in a positive way, it'll pay off for the Flames. So, you know, you just gotta treat people right. And that, it's an unheralded thing, but, you know, it's nice to see the Flames following through on that. And it's good to see.
The best tweet I saw about this today for what future considerations mean, somebody said, when Doug Wilson is on the golf course in Calgary in the future, he will consider ordering Boston Pizza.
Well, I think a lot of people consider ordering Boston Pizza.
That's all he promised, Matt. It doesn't say future order. It says future considerations. If it's on the internet, it must be true. So he will consider ordering from Boston Pizza, and then he'll go back to golfing.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, our GM, Brad Treliving, his father, Jim Treliving, who you see on Dragon's Den, is the owner of the Boston Pizza franchise. So it's not like Matt and I are sponsored there. It's just, I think it's funny to make Boston Pizza jokes once in a while. I saw that on Twitter and had to follow through with it.
Yep.
So looking at the deals that were done today, and let's not get into deals that weren't done, but looking at the actual packages that went, was there anything that you look at and say, I wish the Flames would have paid this price? Like, I know you've talked about potentially bringing in Ilya Kovalchuk, and we saw that deal happen. Anybody here that you look at and say, you know what, that was a good deal?
Oh, they're... two Russians, obviously Kovalchuk, but it makes sense that he went to go hang out with his buddy Ovechkin, so I'm not surprised at all there. And the other is Vladislav Nemestikov. I thought that was a good price.
That was, what, Colorado a fourth paid. That Colorado played?
Yeah.
And Nemestikov can play either side. I like that deal. I would have liked him here.
Yeah. But, you know, it happens. All the rest of the trades, I think Edmonton did well with getting Anathazio from Detroit, but, you know, that 2 seconds, to me, like, that for that player, that's not a good price, personally. Like, I would have been kind of disappointed if the Flames did that trade, but it makes more sense for Edmonton, just because he's fast and he can actually keep up with McDavid.
You would be disappointed if Calgary gave that up, you're saying?
Yeah.
See, and I'm the opposite. Andreas Athanasiou, I think 2 seconds for him, he's 25. He has an RFA, so I mean, he's RFA next year, so he's controllable. I think 2 seconds is a little bit rich, but I would have been willing to do it. Let's say I would have been willing to do it if Dubé didn't look as good as he has recently, because I think getting another young guy in the system would have been worth it.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I think the Flames, where they are in terms of like development of guys like Peltier, Dubé, Phillips, Mangiapane, that like they have enough guys that are both upcoming right now and in the on the team as it sits, that they need more guys coming through the pipeline. And I think that having the second round picks is actually better for this team moving forward than a guy like Anathazio. And he's good, like, don't get me wrong, but I just don't think that where we are right now that it would have made sense.
I also think that my mind would be different if I didn't think a big deal was coming this summer. If I thought they're going to stand pat, there's a good team, it's a cheap way to bring in a guy that we know we've got out of them. You know what? Maybe I would have wanted to go with it, but I think, and I've said this before, I think Goudreau might get moved on the draft floor this year, and if he does, I think that we can easily replenish some of those young assets that way.
Yeah, I think that what we have to see is how this team responds. Like, frankly, this was a vote of confidence in the players,
yep,
by Treliving, and saying, okay, I could have easily sold and gotten a hell of a lot for a bunch of the guys. But, you know, I think that you guys are good. Show me. And if the Flames, frankly, suck, miss the playoffs, or lose in the first round, then I think you're going to see a larger change in the offseason, a more widespread thing. But if the Flames, like, they have a good run to the end of the season, make the playoffs, win a round or two or more, then I think that you'll see them, like, say, like the Taylor Hall thing or some other permutation of getting another higher end forward will come at the draft and go from there.
Obviously, the Flames probably didn't want to move a third pick, but one deal I would have been okay to make was the deal that Buffalo and New Jersey made for Wayne Simmonds. I don't think he's your top guy, but if you're looking at this as a playoff team, I think at 24 points this year, Simmonds could be a good depth right winger, which we know we just need any right winger right now. And Simmonds was sold for a fifth round pick this year. That's a deal I would have been okay to make for Wayne Simmonds.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been a viable trade, but unfortunately,
I think that if the Flames had Geo and Hamonic healthy, this would have been a very different-looking deadline.
Yeah, I think that the Flames really would have went after guys to help out up front, and we would have seen, like, a top six forward.
And that's when I could see the Simmonds deal, or even the, you know, the Ilya Kovalchuk deal, or I could have even seen the Flames at that point making a bigger, sort of like the deal we talked about earlier that Edmonton-Detroit did for a RFA guy. Like, I think, yeah, you would have seen a lot more forwards. I shouldn't say more forwards. I don't think they would have done more than two or three, but I think you would have seen a bigger splash in the forward ranks.
Yeah, and I think it partially also has to do with how good Mangiapane and Dubé have played recently.
And Tree did say that too, as well, that they were trying to give those guys a vote of confidence.
Yeah, and Eat Bread's the third star of the week, so, you know, you have to give him some credit for that, and hopefully he's starting to get more and more comfortable at the NHL level and can contribute on a regular basis.
So looking at the deadline overall and how it affects the Flames, do you think that the balance of power in the Pacific Division has shifted at all? Do you think there's any team now that we need to watch out for more than we thought we did yesterday, or that, you know, maybe if it comes to a playoff round, you've got to say, oh, wow, these guys are significantly better now?
I think Edmonton improved themselves significantly getting Anastasio and Ennis. I don't think Edmonton's really a danger to do much in the postseason, but I think that it would be hard to beat them now.
I honestly expected Edmonton to go out and do a goaltender, whether that was Leonard, or I was half expecting, just because of Ken Holland being from Detroit, that they were going to try and make a play for Jimmy Howard.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that that their whole team is basically, I'm going to outscore you. So, it makes sense to get Anastasio and Green, two very good offensive guys. And, like, none of their players have any concept on how to play defensively, so...
I think this is Edmonton's year to say, we're in the playoffs. When was the last time we were in the playoffs? Quick, bulk up, and let's try to make some out of this.
Yeah, and, you know, hey, we're awesome, yay.
And there's only really so much they could trade, because they only have so many assets that people want. So, I think, again, you're right, I think Edmonton probably did the best on this day in terms of changing their lineup. I think they brought in a top-line player, probably a second-pairing defenseman. I don't think it's going to change who they are all that much, but I think it just rounds them out for the playoffs.
Yeah. Like, to me, based on what they've done at the deadline and their current status, I think 1-2-3 in our division will be some permutation of Calgary, Edmonton, and Vegas. I think that Vancouver losing Markstrom for a bit because he hurt his knee, that will be a bit of a setback.
There's a Zamboni driver available.
True. That the dreaded Zamboni driver.
You gotta wonder what Toronto's coach was saying afterwards, throwing his notebook around, saying you guys got beat by a 42-year-old Zamboni driver.
Not only that, he works for our organization. We're literally paying him to beat us. Like, yeah, it's perfect for it being Toronto. You know, like, they've been so inept for 53 years now, then, like, they can't even beat their own Zamboni driver.
I kind of wanted to see a trade today. Like, I know Hutchinson got traded, but I was kind of waiting for Toronto to trade a goalie to Carolina and say, here, we got your proper one.
Yeah.
Or even, like, the third-string ECHL guy for considerations. Here you go. We got you a real goalie.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you about the Pacific. I think Vegas made their team better by bringing in Robin Leonard. Going down the stretch, I would not want Malcolm Subban in my net. Should something happen to Fleury. I don't think Leonard's necessarily a long-term solution there, but going into the playoffs, I think he gives them some depth. I think Edmonton improved themselves enough that they're not going to fall out of the playoffs. And I said this on the show before, I was half expecting Arizona to try and deal Taylor Hall. They didn't do anything. Winnipeg didn't really do anything. I think you're right. You see Vegas, Edmonton, Calgary in 1, 2, and 3 of the Pacific. And I think the deals that the Flames made today is going to help their back end.
Yeah. And, you know, that's not to say that, like, say, like, Yellison was bad or Davidson were bad. They were adequate NHL defensemen. But, you know, Forbort and Gustafsson are better.
I would be a little hesitant if Yellison or Davidson had to suit up for the Flames in the playoffs. And
what happens
if you get one more injury? Knock on wood. What if Brody goes down or Hanifin goes down? Like, then you're bringing up, what, Renat Valiev? You needed some depth there.
Yeah, and that helps. So, we'll see. And plus, with now they don't really need to have Valimaki play, and maybe they just keep Valimaki out for the season.
Now, Matt, when the Flames went out and got two defensemen, did it feel to you like something big was going to happen? Like, I almost, when I looked at this,
no.
I thought Gustafsson comes in, Forbort comes in. I thought, are they setting something up to move Brody? And I thought maybe they just ran out of time.
Yeah, no, I thought that they're just being confident. I actually wasn't expecting the Flames to make any trade today. So I think that them getting a couple of higher quality depth defensemen helps.
I called it last week that we were going to get a Fanberg-like defense, and I don't think you can get much closer to Fanberg deal than this deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a fourth to
LA.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah. And Forbort, if he's healthy, like, honestly, both guys being 27, like, if the Flames can re-sign them both, like, those guys fit right in terms of, like, the timeline for all of the rest of the guys that are on the team. So, you know, like, for a competitive window, like, that would be a very good group to have moving forward. Because, like, you have guys like Hanifin, Anderson and Shillington, who are younger, and Valimaki, who are younger, and those guys could be kind of your veteran-ish depth guys moving forward, if that be the case.
So let's play coach here. Let's assume that you're the Flames coach, and you're setting the lineup based on where we are now with Giordano and Hamonic out of the lineup. What do your pairings look like with these new guys in the lineup?
Hanifin, Anderson being kind of like the default first pairing. Probably Forbort, Brody being number two, and then Shillington with Gustafsson as your third
Interesting.
Pairing.
See, I would agree Hanifin, Anderson number one. I think I would...
Yeah, or Shillington with Brody would work too.
Yeah, I don't know if they want to put Shillington that high up the lineup.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those where it's tough because, you know, yeah.
I think I would...
You're going to get somebody playing higher than they should
I think I would go to start with Hanifin, Anderson. We've seen Brody Stone. I don't think Stone is the right guy to be that high up. So I would go Hanifin, Anderson. I'd actually go Brody, Gustafsson, and then Forbort and Stone, or Forbort and Shillington, depending on what you want to do. I just think based on what we've seen... Gustafsson can probably play those minutes right now at that level, and I think him and Brody, if Brody can be a little more defensively responsible, is probably the better pairing.
Yeah.
What about when Gio and Hamonic come back?
Well, Giordano takes his spot on the first pairing.
With Brody?
With Anderson.
Oh, with Anderson?
Yeah, or Brody. It depends.
Do you go back to then Hanifin, Hamonic as your second pair?
Well, it's tough. I think that, I think Brody with Gio makes sense, and then keep Hanifin and Anderson, and then probably Forbort and Gustafsson with Shillington being number seven.
So where does Hanifin or Hamonic fit in there?
Well, Hamonic...
He's out for a while.
Yeah. I think Gustafsson, you might see him draw in up front if they want to keep him in the lineup.
You know what, though? I think one of the nice things is we can rotate these guys in and out. So sort of like sometimes you see Ronaldo go in when they need a heavy defenseman. I think you'll see Forbort in that. Or sorry, they put Ronaldo in when they need a heavy forward. I think you'll see Forbort go in when they need a heavy defenseman, a guy who can hit a little bit more. And I think in the playoffs, you can honestly rotate a lot of these guys around. Like, you obviously want to give Anderson and Shillington some time. But I think it lets you, it gives you some different options.
Yeah, I think Forbort, like if the Flames make the playoffs, that Forbort plays every game.
Yeah.
Just because you need that physicality.
Well, and that's where I think the Flames would be willing to take Shillington out if they had to put one of the veteran guys in.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Matt, every year you talk to us about one of the defensemen you want to move to forward. Do you think this year your guy's now Gustafsson?
Well, it's one
you
of
mentioned
those
Shillington
that,
in the past.
We have eight guys that play defense, so you know, if everybody's healthy. So, you know, you can throw Gustafsson. He's a very naturally skilled player, so you know, I've seen worse options.
Or
so,
take Reeder,
you know,
out of lineup
Florida's,
and run seven defense.
Yeah, well, I've seen with Florida, they've played a couple of defensemen as forwards at the same time. Their fourth line, they literally have, like, just the center and two defensemen.
Are they short on guys?
No, they just do that sometimes. Okay. And it actually works rather well, and it's kind of weird. But actually, Mark Pisk had a hat trick for them as a forward, even though he's a defenseman.
So they're short on guys. It's we got weird. Robinson. We got, you know, Quine. We got guys we could sell.
Well, they got to do things different. You know, other teams listen to me, you see. You know, they try the defenseman as forward thing, and it works.
Just Calgary doesn't listen to you.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't see it happening unless the team's really desperate. What I can see, though, is playing Gustafsson more, I don't want to say as a forward. He'll still be a defenseman, but I can see, for example, the faceoff dots, lining him up as a forward, or letting him cheat almost all the way to the hash marks. Like, I can see them giving this guy a lot more offensive opportunities.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, you could roll seven defensemen and with 11 forwards and having him only being out there for power plays and, like, offensive zone, like, if you need offense type of
thing. I'm just looking like
you could go
that route. Gustafsson needs a defensive partner, and I'm not sure that I'm quite ready for Stone or Shillington to sort of, I don't want to say clean up his mess, but be the defensive guy on the ice. I think you've either got to put him with Brody or Anderson to make him most effective.
Or Forbort. Even.
Yeah, maybe. I think Forbort being a heavier guy, I'd rather have him out there with someone not as offensive, someone who can still play defense but isn't the grinder. Yeah. I would actually like to see the Flames at some point try Giordano and Gustafsson together.
Yeah.
I think, not saying I'd want that to be our forever pair, but we see great things out of Brody or anyone who plays with Gio, and I'd be curious to see what we'd get out of Gustafsson there.
Yeah. Why not?
So with that in mind, we are talking about defensemen. We actually have an injury report. Mark Giordano is back in full practice today in Boston. He was taking contact, I believe, so back full-time. He could be ready, it's being said, it's as early as tomorrow's game in Boston or Thursday's game in Nashville. They brought him on the road trip. Brad said he was probably going to play. I kind of thought that was just posturing, because if somebody knows you're without your defenseman, prices go up. But it looks like he could be back in the lineup, so that's nice to hear. But
yeah, I still think it's posturing. I'd be somewhat surprised if he's back this week.
I think if they went out and got an Oscar Fantenberg-like defenseman, he'd be in this week because they need him. I think with Gustafsson and Forbort, you can buy yourself enough time to make sure he's really healthy.
Yeah, and we have enough good defensemen now that we're kind of fine for the time being. And, you know, you just have to wait for those two guys to get healthy and get out there again.
And Hamonic is now week to week, so I don't think he's going to be back anytime soon. I think, again, with Gustafsson and Forbort, I think that this will buy the Flames some time with him, and I think he'll be back by the playoffs, but I don't think you see him much before that. Matt, do you think we'll see Juuso Välimäki this season wearing a Calgary Flames jersey?
Well, I think that in terms of the expansion draft, if Välimäki plays in either the AHL or the NHL this season, that he burns his eligibility and we'd have to protect him. And I don't know about you, but I think that there's not a huge rush to get him back. You know, now especially, like, it'd be different, like, if the Flames, say, were in the playoffs and ran into, like, four defensive injuries and you need a body, then you would probably throw him in there, but I don't really see any need for him to rush back now. And maybe just play out the season and just, you know, not have him play.
I don't know if they'll go without him playing. I think he'll be assigned to Stockton, and with them being number one in their division, I think he'll play there.
Yeah. Oh, I think that he'll be in Stockton if he does play. I think that with that eligibility for the expansion,
is that only for regular season games?
I don't know, but if it was up to me, I'd just kind of say, it's better than having to lose somebody better for nothing, just so you can play a couple of games at the end of the season.
Because you'd rather protect Forbort.
Well, no, you can only do, like, three defensemen and seven forwards, or four defensemen and four forwards. And, like, obviously you're going to protect Shillington, Anderson, Hanifin, and, if necessary, Välimäki. So, you know, you don't want to go that route if you don't have to.
If we look at the Heat schedule, they have about 15 games left, it looks like. I can see the Flames. I mean, Valimaki is, like you said, he's able to clear waivers to go up and down. He does have that weird eligibility requirement. I can see them send him down there. I mean, again, they're going to take their time on this guy, but I could even see him go down the end of the year for his three-game conditioning stint or whatever in the AHL, which I doubt would burn the year. But they're also very high on this kid. Like, they see him. If you listen to Brad today, he talked about, you know, you're without three top three defensemen if you look at Uso. So I think they'd be okay to protect him. But I don't know. It's tough, man. I think with the Flames going to the playoffs, the baby Flames going to the playoffs and the Flames going to the playoffs, I think, yeah, you send him to Stockton, you let him play out his time there, get his feet under him, and try again next year. I wonder if zapping the whole year is the right idea.
Yeah, it's...
Could they send him to the E?
Probably. Could they
if you haven't played all year, maybe Kansas is the speed you want to play at. Good old scrambly ECHL hockey.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that, like, if there's no eligibility things with I by all means send him to Kansas and let him have fun down in the E.
Send him for his three-game conditioning in Stockton, send him down to the E, then bring him back up to Stockton for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? He'd be the best defender in the ECHL.
Oh,
even with his
far.
Bum knee.
Yeah, he'd be a freaking all-star.
They'd convert him to forward and he'd score all the goals.
You can just play it, do whatever you want, so you're just the best player in the entire league.
If
so
you were coaching down there, you just hire a bunch of guys who can play a little bit of everything, and somebody go stand on the blue line. Okay, your defense this shift.
Yep.
That's why Matt doesn't coach down there. Well, Matt...
Well, you see, what you do is you sign 20 defensemen, and you just have your entire team be defensemen. You'll never get scored on. You might not never score, but hey, that doesn't matter.
So Matt's looking at the Oilers playbook and saying, let's do the opposite.
Yes, exactly. They don't know how to play defense. You know, that would be like the ultimate matchup. The team that's just all offense, no defense versus a team that's literally all defensemen.
And then your goaltender would score.
Yeah. No, sure, why
none
not?
None of your D Bizarro guys. Your goalie would be the most offensive player.
Well, hey, you know, when you're in a week where the Zamboni driver gets a win against the Maple Leafs, anything is possible now.
You're going to go and find some old, not only current defensemen, but some old defensemen who are in their 40s and 50s and put together like an ECHL seniors team.
Yeah.
Once you win that...
Chelios, what are you doing?
Once you win their cup, you'll go for the Allen Cup.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, I guess the question to ask about this team, seeing where they're at, seeing what they've done this season, if you look really since the All-Star break last year, which is when the Flames really started to trend downwards after the great season, you look at the first part of this season, and I would say even to now, where they've had some good games, but they've had some okay games, are these Calgary Flames just a middle-of-the-road team who once in a while has a flash of brilliance?
Well... I tend to not really look at where teams are in the standings. Even last year at the All-Star break, like I was lauding St. Louis and saying that was a team that I thought could make the playoffs even though they were dead last because they just had too much talent to be that bad. And Calgary, it's very much the same thing where this team has just too much talent to be as bad as they have been this season. And, like, just for pure roster skill level, Calgary is right there with St. Louis and Colorado as best in the West. It's just that pretty much every single thing has gone wrong with this team virtually all season. Where even if they just beat some of the bad teams that they've struggled with, like LA and Chicago, and did what, you know, everybody else does with LA and Chicago, the Flames could be right up there with St. Louis right now.
But when you're saying everything goes wrong, it's not like they've had injuries, not like they've had guys get hurt. This is purely, I think, between the ears of the guys in this roster.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you've seen, like, Gaudreau and Monahan, and they've been, for them, awful this season. And, you know, like, I think they're both having their worst seasons, at least since they've been teammates. I think Monahan's first season was worse than this. But, you know, like, it's not... Like, you come to expect a certain level of play, and, like, we've seen that from Gaudreau this past week, where he's looked a lot more like himself. And, you know, like, if those guys are playing at the level that they're capable of, then, you know, like, there's no reason why this team shouldn't be... Like, it's not like this team has major structural deficiencies, like, say, the Oilers with not having any depth or defense or, you know, like, a lot of things. And, like, this team, they have a very competent defense core. They have adequately decent goaltending. They have a good top six, a good bottom six. Like, there's not really anything that's a glaring, like, oh, you're missing, like, you don't have a Ginla type of thing. And, like, the rest of the team is just awful, and you only have a Ginla, or, you know, you need that extra star player. Like, Calgary has everything they need. It's just a lot of in-between-the-years problems and
so do you think
getting
that they're
pulling in the same direction.
So do you think they're a good team that's underperforming, or do you think they're a mediocre team?
I think they're one of the best teams in the NHL, and I still do, and I still have felt that way all season, and that they've just been underperforming all season.
I think on paper, as you said, structurally, this is a good team. I think there's definitely some holes, and I think they'll address those holes. I think there's some guys who are maybe passengers or being asked to do more than they should on every team. But yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think this is the best team in the league. I don't think this is a consistent Western Conference Champions team like we see last year. But I think this year is a year that everybody's underperforming. And I think with most of this same core next year, you know, we can debate coach changes another time, but with most of this same core next year, I think you'll see a better result.
Yeah, and like that's like back when I was saying like the Flames should look at selling for this year. It was not like, oh, we'll trade Gaudreau and Monahan and, you know, or anything like that. It was trade off expiring contracts and some of the depth guys, and just to get different bodies in there. And like, we've kind of saw that today. Like, you get Forbort and Gustafson, who are basically younger, cheaper versions of Brody and Hamonic. And, you know, that makes it, you know, it's an interesting way of being able to see if those guys are adequate enough to be able to replace the guys already existing on the team.
And I think we're going to see a big move as well to bring in another top six forward.
Yeah, same here. Like, I would be... Frankly, I would be shocked if the Flames did not get another top six forward. Doesn't have to be a star guy like Taylor Hall, but, you know, like, just somebody who's a legitimate, like, in the same caliber as guys like Lindholm, Tkachuk, Monahan, Gaudreau, and even to a lesser extent Backlund, somewhere in that, between those tiers, another guy like that.
I would be surprised if come drop of the puck next year for the regular season, Gaudreau is still a Flame. I think not that
I wouldn't be.
Not that I think it's, you know, he's a bad player, but I think now if you want to move for a big piece, like a big right winger, now's the time to maximize the value on that asset.
Yeah, I could see that. It would depend. Like,
I think they see Tkachuk as being able to be that number one left winger.
Yeah, it's one of those where you'd have to find the right team. And, like, honestly, the team to me that would make the most sense if you were going to do that would actually be the New York Rangers. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I don't know how this season's going to turn out. And, you know, like, if Gaudreau can, like, how would you say this year he has had problems adjusting, and like we've seen that on the breakaways. Like, for years he was basically able to do one of like two or three different moves, and he'd consistently score doing those two or three different moves. And now, like, goalies have figured out that, oh, well, he just does one of those things, so just don't give him those options, and you've made the save, and now he's not scoring. So I think that he just needs to change things up a little bit. And, like, we saw that with that goal that he scored against Detroit, where he picked the corner and took a slap shot instead of, you know, trying to finesse things. And I think that, you know, if he can make those subtle adjustments, that he'll be just like he is. I think Calgary just needs to be more of a scoring by committee type team, and instead of just relying on Goudreau or just Monahan or just Tkachuk or just
Lindholm. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And like I said, I'm not saying, you know, Goudreau's had a terrible year, let's move him, but I look back at, you know, the return we got for Jerome and stuff like that, and I think if you're looking at this guy as at the top of his game, 1 year removed from a 90-point season, I think now you might look at him and say, you know what? It's not that we don't like him or he's not good, but let's maximize our return on the asset. Yeah. You said New York. I could actually doing a deal with Philly for Konechny and something.
Yeah. There's lots of East Coast teams that, you know, because like, the whole Metro Division's murder central. Like, New York is at 70 points, just like Calgary is. And yet they're seventh in their division, so, you know, and they have no hope of the playoffs.
And I think that in the draft, it gives you a lot more time to chat, to figure things out. Like, that's why that's not a deadline deal, because if a deal like that gets made, it's a hockey deal.
Yeah.
We'll see, but I wouldn't be surprised if Goudreau moves this summer. Again, not because he's a bad flame, but I just think that, you know, if you look at Tkachuk as potentially number one, which I think this organization does, let's maximize our return on the asset.
Yep.
You could get almost anything you want for Goudreau. You get a new building for Goudreau.
Yeah, it just depends on what's available, what the cost is, and all that kind of fun stuff.
And there's always teams
that... I think, honestly, like, Treliving is kicking the tires with everybody just to constantly just to see what's available and all that, and if it makes sense, it'll be done.
The other thing I think would be really, you know, popular about Goudreau for another team is his contract. $6.75 million. How many, you know, 90-point guys or legit first-line left wingers are you paying less than $7 million to? Like, I could see a team who's cash-strapped or thinks they're going to be cash-strapped trying to take on that deal. I think Calgary could get something back because of that as a premium for, hey, you got two options. Take the expensive guy or take our guy.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you just saw, like, the Islanders get Pageau for a first, second, and third, and, you know, Barkley Goudreau, being traded for a first just because he's under a
Barkley
cheap contract.
Barkley Goudreau.
Yeah. So, you know, like, if Calgary did decide to sell Goudreau, like, they could get a lot for him just because of the cheapness of his contract. Just like when we picked up Hanifin, like, or Hamonic, I mean, that a lot of the cost with that was that he was a very cheap defenseman for his level of play. And I think that, like, Hamonic, I don't think would have been more than a second-round pick had he not been a $4 billion defenseman.
And I know you're big on the Flames bringing in Taylor Hall, who's a left-winger. So in that case, would you say move Goudreau for a right-winger center? Then you've got Tkachuk and Hall as your top two left-wingers.
That would be a viable thing if you... Especially because now, like, you know well in advance, I think, like, 2 weeks before the draft, that's when you can start talking to guys that you would know that, oh, well, Hall wants, like, say, $7.5 or $8 million or something like that. Well, and he's willing to come here for this many, and if those numbers are acceptable to you, do you then go, well, hey, if I do that, you know, and say, then can that put other things in play? And, you know, like, kind of like have a, you know, handshake agreement with Hall before the draft, trade Goudreau at the draft, and then sign Hall. It's doable. It just, yeah, it would, you'd have to have a lot of things.
Because you don't want Tkachuk or Goudreau to be your third line left, and I don't think either of them have done well the times we've converted them to right. So if you are going to bring in Hall, I think at that point Goudreau's out of here.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, but, you know, there's a lot of, we have to basically get through the rest of the regular season and the playoffs if the Flames make it to be able to start talking. You know, like, frankly, if the Flames miss the playoffs, I think Gaudreau and Monahan are both out of here. And, like, this team is a severely different team next season, even going into a partial, like, rebuild-ish with Lindholm and Tkachuk being the two primary
guys. If these
guys
don't make the playoffs, for sure, I think 13's out of here.
Yeah.
If they do, well, maybe they hang on to him a little bit longer. But, yeah, if they don't make the playoffs, I think there's going to be a lot of heads that roll.
Yeah.
Well, you talked...
You
talked about getting through the season. Why don't we talk about this road trip the Flames have to get through? We did our predictions last week. We only had two games, so it made it easier. And I finally won again. Nobody's won since December 2nd. I won last week predicting we'd win in Detroit, lose to Boston. You were a little less optimistic thinking we'd lose both games. So I now lead this year 4-0. I don't think there's been a year you've won this game, Matt.
No, I really do suck at this game.
Maybe next week, maybe next year we'll just retire this game and assume I'll just be the champion. We'll give me a belt like the wrestlers wear that I can wear every time we record.
Yep.
We got four games on the docket. Tomorrow night, Tuesday night, the Calgary Flames played 5 p.m. in Boston. Then on Thursday night, a 6 p.m. start time in Nashville. Saturday night at 2 p.m. Mountain start time in Tampa Bay, and then the back-to-back on Sunday, another 2 p.m. in Florida. So four games, three against Eastern Conference teams, one against a Western Conference opponent. Matt, how do you think we're going to do?
Loss, win, loss, win.
So you think we lose to Boston and we lose to Tampa Bay?
Yeah.
And you're saying we win against Nashville and Florida.
I think that all of the games are going to be bizarre this week. Like, I don't expect, like, every game being, like, a 3-2, like, a normal... I'm expecting, like, a lot of offense from the Flames and just weird things happening. It just seems to me that... Like, especially when we go to both Tampa and Florida, those tend to be... just some of the most bizarre games, period. Like, I remember that 9-6 loss to Tampa that one year, and, like, we usually have, like, 6-5 games against the Panthers, so, yeah, just expecting weird stuff to happen this week.
I'm going to go a little bit different. I think the Flames are going to have a good week. I think they'll beat Nashville, Tampa Bay, and Florida and lose to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do for your goaltending starts this week?
Riddick
started last game against Detroit. Before that was Talbot against Boston. Do you go back to Talbot for the second Boston game?
Frankly, I think you...
Talbot's been the better goaltender as of late.
Yeah, it's really tough. I think that you might go Riddick against Boston just because...
Show him something different?
Yeah, and then if... Riddick wins, then give him Nashville. If he doesn't, then switch back to Talbot.
Yeah, I was thinking the same at first. I thought, well, we see them twice in a week. Let's show them a different goaltender against Boston. I think if it was me not looking at wins, I would go Riddick against Boston, Talbot against Nashville, Tampa Bay, and then Riddick on the back-to-back against Florida. If Calgary thinks Riddick is their guy for the playoffs, now's the time to give the other guys some play time and give Riddick some rest.
Yeah. We'll see. I think that you just have to get through the Boston game, and that'll inform a lot of what the rest.
Riddick hasn't looked good on the road this last little bit.
Oh, Riddick hasn't looked good, period, since beginning of December. So it's, you know, one hopes that he bounces back at some point, but.
And there's two trains of thought. You could say it's play him in all the games to get him to bounce back, or since they just need to sit down and rest. So, I mean, you and I don't know. It's up to the goalie coaches. But I'm right now with the need for points, I would go with the guy that we know, and I think that's Talbot. The guy we know can play better games.
Yeah. Instead of being Big Save Dave, like, lately it's been more Occasional Save Dave.
That's right.
So
Bench Sitting Dave, BSD. Yeah. And if he's no good, well, there's a Zamboni driver available.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. I think the goaltending might be the most interesting story this week as far as who is they go with. Talbot's had an up and down year for this team, but I think he's looked solid more often than not. And I think right now I'd be running Cam Talbot until he proves otherwise. I think right now I think you almost have Talbot lose the job rather than Riddick earn the job. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think, well, frankly, with how jumbled the standings are, Calgary just needs to find ways of getting points on the board. Like, there's too many teams, like, right through 11th, frankly, that are right there. Like, if Minnesota wins their next two games, they'll only be 1 point behind where we are now with an even games played. So, you know, like, it's tough. And, like, Calgary's in a bit of a hard spot right now, and, like, there's only 19 games left, and they need to... It's basically a jump ball, and they just have to be better the last couple weeks of the season than everybody else is right now.
Yeah, and sometimes that's just going with what you know versus what you want or what you believe is the right thing, is go with the guy who's shown you they can do it.
Yep.
Well, Matt, I think that wraps up our trade deadline episode, another one in the books, and we'll see how these two defensemen, Gustafsson and number 56, number 20, how they both look this week. And I think, honestly, I think we'll see more out of Gustafsson as far as being noticeable, but we'll talk next week and see what we think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And as always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.